Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.
Off to a great start. Welcome to the Mike O'Mara Show. It's your old buddy Rob Spiewak along with Josh Sroka and a man I consider a friend because he always calls me pal in his texts. It's Adam Ferreira. Adam, how are you?
Okay. He's a bad mother. Watch your mouth.
No. You're joining us from your New York domicile, yes?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm at the outpost here.
I know that you split your time between...
Was that SWAT?
That was SWAT because...
That was SWAT.
I watched a Top Gear promo that had you in it that had the SWAT theme, and it doesn't take much to make me want to hear Rhythm Heritage. I love the band.
Who remembers SWAT? TJ would turn his hat backwards.
And then I do remember.
Aim with it with an M16.
We are of a certain age. Josh probably didn't watch SWAT.
What were you, a reader?
No, I was a baby.
He's a kid. He's a kid. I know you all know who Adam is. Adam is an actor, comedian. You've seen him in Rescue Me and Nurse Jackie. And I think most recently, I saw you in Nana's.
Yeah.
The movie with the Italian grandmother.
Restaurant.
Yeah. I loved it.
Oh, thanks.
Now, was it hard for you to play an Italian?
Here's what happened. It was a period piece, so that they dressed me all up. Right? They slicked back my hair. They gave me a 59 Plymouth, right? So that was my car.
Right.
In the script, it was a 59 Caddy, the big fin caddy, you know, the big,
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I told my manager when I got the gig, I'm like, they're not gonna get that car. And they didn't. They got a 59 Plymouth. So when they dressed me up, I stood in front of the Plymouth. I sent a picture to my mother. I go, Ma, who do I look like? You look just like your Uncle Tony. Now I'm gonna play the guy. Perfect.
Adam is coming to town, our neck of the woods. He'll be at the Arlington Cinema in Draft House this Friday and Saturday. I've been there. That's a fun club and a good room.
Yeah, it's great. It's a lot of fun. Pete, the owner, is a dear friend. So I'm looking forward to every time I can come back. And I come to see you guys. I like doing
That's awesome. And you can buy tickets through your website?
You get tickets on the website, or you can go to ArlingtonDraftHouse.com and get tickets there. But either way, come and see me.
Yeah, go do it. AdamFerreira.com. Also, you're headed out to South Dakota the end of the month. Box Elder, and then Kenosha, Wisconsin. You like the colder climates, it seems.
You know what? The Box Elder Theater, my manager said, you're going to South Dakota. And I said, why? And he said, well, they hit the number. I said, okay, I'm going.
Hey, so, it's just the way we would do it.
For them to do.
Sure, yeah. So if you're in South Dakota, box up one of your elders. Come and see me.
Oh, I didn't think of it that way. But yeah, bring them along and keep them safe.
And here's grandma. Open the lid.
You won't hear as many laughs, but they will be there. You've got your podcast, 30 Minutes You'll Never Get Back. Congratulations on over 350 episodes. No one sticks with a podcast that long.
Yeah, it's no one tells you it's a lot of work, but at least there's no money. So there's that.
I know. And people ask
me
what.
At least you're done after 30 minutes.
That's true. People say, what's your favorite nonprofit organization? I say, the Mike O'Mara Show. Also, you do your Facebook Live on Tuesday nights. They're great. Yeah. And of course, you can find all this stuff out at AdamFerreira.com. Now, we have a bit of a history. Josh, I don't know if you know this, but the first time we had Adam in studio, we had him taste my fruitcake. Yeah. And he liked it enough that very weekend, he snuck into the improv and watched us do a live TMOS and gave us, I would say, a B to a B plus.
He wanted more fruitcake.
I think he did want more fruitcake. And
you guys are fun.
No, we have a great time. I just really enjoy speaking with you. Now, question.
Go ahead.
You're still touring, and touring is great, but has it totally rebounded from, like, the touring pre-COVID? Because I know you toured through COVID. You did masked performance. Did you do a drive-in theater performance?
I did a drive-in benefit. We did what we had to do just to get through. But it's the thing about getting people to come out. It's not easy, you know, people, because you have so much to do at home.
Right.
You know, now the world can be pumped into your house. Not only can the world be pumped into your house, the way you want to see the world can be pumped into your house.
Yeah, you can control it. Yeah.
Yeah, you're like, oh, I don't like it. Delete. Okay, but what if that's what it is? Doesn't matter. Delete. So
delete.
That's terrifying.
Now, you're good at the social media, which I like. Your Thanks. Socials that you pop up all the time are always great. When you got in, and how long have you been at stand-up?
Oh, July 13th, 1988, Wednesday night, Eastside Comedy Club, open mic night.
Now, you just have that memorized, or are you like Mary Lou Henner? You know that's a Wednesday.
No, I just know. No, I'm not Mary Lou Henner. I just know when open mic was.
Yeah, so you're closing in on 40 years of doing stand-up. When you started and you first started to get your traction, did you ever foresee something like social media becoming such an important part of being a comic?
Who am I, Nostradamus?
How the hell could I see that?
No. But I mean, as far as...
Did you think we'd invent the internet and it would help you out?
All right. Okay, two against one, not fair. Let me rephrase it.
Please do.
When the social media started to happen and you had to embrace it, did it surprise you what an amazing part of your job just filling your feed would be?
No, I didn't know what a necessary part of the job would be. And it's the new delivery system. I had no clue, because when it did hit the awareness of, like, this is what we need to do, this is the new reality, this is the new delivery system, I was doing two TV shows at the same time. I was doing Top Gear and Nurse Jackie. So I didn't sleep for like 2 years. So I was running back and forth. And then, you know, I was on planes back and forth all the time, and then doing stand-up. And then when I came back to, I'm like, oh, what is, I have to be this? You know, what's a podcast? All right, let's get to work.
Yeah.
You know, and it's
were you fast to embrace it, or did you drag your feet?
No, I went kicking and screaming only because I'm like the uncertainty. I'm not good with the uncertainty. You know, I'm not.
I hear you. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and it's just, but I wasn't steeped in it. So I'm like, I don't want to learn something new, but you have to. You have to realize that this is the new communication system. So, and not knowing what to do and be willing to make the mistakes. You know, I feel bad for kids now. They got to make the mistakes out loud.
You
know, they got to make the mistakes out loud in front of everybody. You know,
they were talking about when American Idol was so hot that bands can't suck anymore.
Yeah.
You can't just go out and suck and get good. You have to be good when you're ready to launch. So there's no room for mistakes.
Yeah.
And all of your mistakes are captured forever.
Yeah.
On the internet. Yeah.
The pressure of that, that's got to be tremendous pressure.
Mm-hmm. You know?
And but it's like now when I put stuff out, and my problem, fellas, and I have many, but my problem is I'm a perfectionist. I'm like, that's not right. Well, what are they gonna think of that? And it's Doritos. You know, eat all you want. We'll make more. You just got to keep
eating it. Now, when you're doing the socials, and I know you probably don't want to reveal like your, I guess it's, I can use this without looking too stupid, your chunks, your prepared bits that do because you want people to come to the club for those. So they're largely crowd work, I guess, or stuff that's unexpected.
It's what's on my social media. If you come by the channel, and please do, there's a variety of things. You'll see stuff, live stand-up clips. There's also, we do sketches on there as well. There's bar sketches I do with my pal Mike.
Love your bar sketches. Yeah.
We just did another round yesterday. Because now it's your own channel. My wife keeps telling me, you have your own television channel. Thank you, honey. I know. It sounds like she lives under a mushroom.
But when you said
kicking and screaming, she was the one pulling me kicking and screaming. Picture me landing in Lilliput. I'm tied up in dental floss. And this beautiful elf-like woman that I married is just dragging me. Go, here's the future, you dope.
Among a lot of comics? Did a lot of people that you came up with, did they say, whoa, 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 this looks like it's the future, but I don't know if it's me or not?
Well, the guys I came up with were being forced to embrace it. You know, it's just
changed.
It's just a manifestation of change. It's just what it is. Look, at some point there was someone going, a flying machine? That's preposterous.
What I see is people who come from that TV world who have trouble understanding that they can do whatever they want, that they don't know how to operate without a producer telling them what to do.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I will tell you this, for my tiny little brain, the structure was great. I love getting a script and going, I got to make this thing. I was the Frankenstein monster. I was like, I got to give this creation life, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's the structure eases anxiety. Loss of structure for me just spins my anxiety around, because you don't mind working hard. You just want to know what to work hard at. And the thing with
understood,
the internet,
yeah.
you don't know what's going to work and what's not going to work.
And you also don't sometimes know when you're done. You know, yeah. Is this it? Are we done with this? Can we move to the next
thing? But there
thing?
Is because no done. The monster right. needs to be fed. There is no done. It just is.
Now, when you're doing your crowd work, which is great.
Thanks.
First of all, I have to know, some people in your line of work are sensational at it. Mm-hmm. Some people look like they're moving rocks when they do it.
Sure.
You are effortless and you're very funny.
Thank
but
you.
That is without structure, is it not? So
it is,
is
but
it
I'll,
hard
I'll
for
tell you?
You
what, yeah, I'll tell you what happens with that is when I got on stage, the first time I was on stage, I remember I walked off, you know, that Wednesday night, July 13th, 1988, Long
yeah,
Island.
It's in Jericho my calendar now. Yeah,
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. By the way, the place now is a Pomodoro restaurant. But when I walked off stage, I woke up the next day and I just went, I wasn't thinking. I wasn't thinking.
And what? How do you
I
mean?
I wasn't in my way.
Okay. All right.
And I knew, I'm like, that's, I don't know how long they're going to let me stay, but I belong here.
That's so cool though.
So that's when it all goes away. That's the highest state of my being is when I'm, when I'm, within the crowd. For some reason God said this will be your pathway, so I can do that.
That's so cool. You could, I mean, I'm sure you could go out and do a set just on crowd work.
I had to. When I was a kid, I was very fortunate. When I was a kid, I worked way before I should have, because they said, can you do a half hour? Yeah.
And can you ride a horse?
Yeah, I said no clue. So I just did it, and it was a survival thing. It was just like, yeah. Oh, I can do this. I can not only can I do this, I'm good at this, and I'm not the one doing it. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
I was like, this ain't coming from me. This is coming through me.
Yeah. Yeah. I hate to ask about the serious business of comedy, but I find it so fascinating and very telling with it, which I love. When you're doing crowd work, you come out. Do you ever peek out to see who's in the front row, or is it always in the moment? And
no, it's always in the moment. Something will happen. I mean, usually if somebody coughs or somebody drops a glass or somebody has a weird laugh or snorts, you know, it's like, okay, let's go here. That's when you're co-creating with the audience, because they've experienced the same thing and you're in the state of becoming together. That's what makes it special. You know, it doesn't make me special. It makes the act special. Mine's just to have the courage to get out of the way. It's the willingness to be a vessel.
Okay, if no one coughs, if no one drops a glass, is there a look that a patron might have that you would zero in on?
Yeah, there'll be something that gets my attention that I'll follow, that I've cultivated enough to go, the instinct will take me there. And then to be honest with you, if I'm doing a shoot where there's a camera set up and I get the first four people, I'm going to work those four people because they're on camera.
Of course, yeah.
You know, so there's situational awareness, but most of the time the spontaneous stuff, if you are willing to be quiet and listen, and take that direction, it usually leads you to a better place than you could have even imagined.
I imagine you surprise yourself sometimes with stuff you find almost by accident.
And then a lot of stuff like what will happen is like you'll be riffing with someone and an idea you've had floating around in your head in the heads up display comes out. And you might be able to get bits out of it. You might be able to at least complete a thought to know what it is. That's the thing about, I've learned all my lessons through stand-up. So I can't fix my life, but I can fix a joke. So I know.
I'm always surprised.
I know when there's too many words and there's too many cluttered thoughts. I'm sorry I interrupted you.
No, I was just saying, I'm always surprised with how open the audience is, where there's always someone who shares too much.
Oh, yeah. But I think that's a condition of our current way we're talking to each other. We're talking like this, you know. People want to be seen, and they want to be heard. So if you're so isolated and you're not leaving your house, this becomes the next thing. So they're conditioned to do that. The other side of the coin is people want to be part of the crowd work, so they'll yell stuff out, which is fine. Okay, we'll deal with this.
I think also, tell me if you disagree, it's sort of a pack mentality because people are not going out as much.
Right.
And if you get 200 people in a little brick room, they're going to relate to each other because they're all there for the same thing. It probably gives them a sense of safety and they might be more forthcoming. Plus, there's alcohol.
Yeah. There's always that.
Let me tell you about Gina's sister. That bitch.
Now, speaking of Gina's sister, I think when I think back to the times we've talked, I think my favorite stories you tell involve your relatives and specifically your parents. One thing that lives, they say this on the internet, one thing that lives in my brain rent-free is you said when they were going to Atlantic City, they would say, we're headed south or something like
that. That was the euphemism. Your father and I are going south, which means they're pissing away the inheritance. And they did.
But it's so relatable.
Yeah.
And you've got, of course, you've already mentioned your wife and uncles. You come from a family. How rich of an environment is that for comedy? And does it continue to be rich to this day?
Oh, yeah. It's they're characters. I mean, I've been given the double-edged sword with me was the sense of alienation. Mm-hmm. I've had, like, you never felt like you fit in. Like, all the criminals were on my father's side of the family, and all the neurotics are on my mother's side of the family.
What a good mix.
Yeah. So I know how to hotwire a car, but then I feel guilty, and I bring it back. So humor was the way that I could fit in, right? So I was always, and I didn't realize this when I was a kid, but I was always the observer. And and a lot of it, when the emotions
were you the youngest or the oldest?
Everyone thinks you're the oldest.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. But I was, I also noticed that a lot of the stress release comes from character, unbridled behavior of the characters. I'll tell you a story. Okay. My dad passes away, right? So we're sitting with the funeral director. It's me, my little mother's in the middle, and my brother Johnny's over here. And my brother Johnny, he's a big boy, right?
Yeah. Okay.
He's a water heater with a head. He's a big boy.
Okay.
So my mother's crying. The funeral director gives her the tissues and she's wiping her eyes and she's going through. She goes, oh, I love these flowers. They're beautiful. Okay. Big horseshoe flowers, Rob. Like my father won the Kentucky Derby. This is what she
won. I know. It goes way over the top.
Yeah. Okay. So we get the flowers and then I call my wife and say, honey, do me a favor. Take my out. Right? We are talking business with this guy. So my brother Johnny leans in and goes to the funeral director. All right, give me the number. The guy slides a piece of paper to my brother.
No!
My brother picks up the piece of paper and goes, oh! I'm going to need you to go back and sharpen your pencil on this. The guy's face goes white.
I guess so. He's
like, he don't know what to do. I said, can you excuse us for a minute? He goes, yeah, sure. He leaves the room. I look at my brother, Johnny, go, what are you doing? You're leaning on a funeral director? He's like, come on, smarten up. What do you think? These flowers only going to one funeral today? Come on.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he didn't need to handle it like Godfather 2.
Well, that's what happened. The guy comes back in. He comes back in, right? And he's sweating. So I take the tissues. I go, here, wipe your head. So he's sweating. And he looks at my brother, he slides a piece of paper back to him. He's like, better, better. Then Johnny leans in and goes, all right, how much for cash? He's like, I don't know what you mean. And my brother goes, you know what you mean. Everyone's got to deal with death and taxes, but I ain't doing both on the same day. He takes out a wad of cash. He puts it on the desk. He's like, we're done. He gets up, he walks out. He's got this big smile on his face. I go, what are you doing? He's like, Pop would have been proud.
Your pop would have been proud. Absolutely. Yeah. That is so great. You never think about, you know, funeral directors. You say, you know, friends of ours would like a better deal on this service. What does Johnny do for a living, if I may ask?
He's in a restaurant business.
Shocking.
Yeah.
At least that's what everyone knows about.
No, he's a chef. He went to the culinary institute in Hyde Park. He's really good.
Wow, but that's, you know,
he runs restaurants now. He used to be a chef. Now he runs restaurants.
I guarantee you that funeral director is not accustomed to that kind of treatment.
Nah.
Because they go in and they really attack the grieving. I've seen it.
Yeah.
And when you bite back, that's great.
He's sitting there. He's like, you know, the funeral director's like, you know, he's only going to be buried once. I go, yeah, he may not be buried alone. Knock it off.
I love that. Yeah, I come from a colorful family myself.
Good.
And what's great is, you know, we've got our greatest hits stories. Mm-hmm. And when the family gets together, we roll down the greatest hits. And it's always great. But something new always comes out. Mm-hmm. And that's the magic. So I imagine when you guys get together, if you land on a new mini topic of something, you can absolutely build on it.
Yeah. And there's also when people remember the stories differently. It didn't happen that way. Okay.
Exactly. Exactly. Wow. Now, we mentioned you're in New York now. I know you split time between New York and Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And this is a really jive Jay Leno question, but two totally different audiences, right?
Oh, yeah. There's more access to the audiences
if we leave Kenosha and South Dakota out of it, let's speak in extremes. Let's talk about doing a club in New York and doing a club in Los Angeles.
Well, the thing about New York is you can work more, without getting in the car. You know,
right.
I can do 3-5 sets a night. So you're a better comic in New York. You know, LA, you got to drive everywhere. And, you know, you might get two, but stage time is very limited. As far as the audience, what I found in New York, and I got this realization when I was younger. You go on the road, you write your material. It's like buying cocaine. Then you come back to New York and you boil it off and make crack.
So
if you write 3 minutes of new stuff on the road, you're going to come back to New York and you realize it's a minute 30 when you take the fat out of it.
But it's great.
But it's a hammer because it's got to be bang, bang, bang. There's no wasted words, you know, and that's the beauty of working in this city.
Now, when you talk about no wasted words, and we can come back to New York too, but I know your idol is George Carlin.
Yeah, well, Pryor, Robin Williams, and then Carlin. The order would be Robin, Pryor, and Carlin. But Pryor and Robin are close.
Okay. Well, I know you did idolize Carlin. You got to open for
George
him.
George was a sweetheart. He was so kind to me. He was, hold on. What do I got? Here, let me show you this. I got this hanging here.
This is why we do video. How great is that?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
George was a mechanic. George was a, when you look at his economy of words, when you look at the things he wrote about, he was a mechanic. I saw Pryor's beating heart. I just saw the pathos. I saw the pain. And I was like, that's what I saw when I was a kid. And that's what drew me in. And then Robin was just all over the place. That was the energy that's in my head. You know,
that's I would imagine to see Robin Williams unleashed would almost have a slight flavor of fear to it because he could be so out of control, but in a wonderful way.
Yeah. But that was the energy that was inside of me, that manic energy. Mm-hmm. And then the heart was beating with Pryor. And then George, for me, was the mechanic. I was like, oh, that's how you get it out.
I wanted to ask about Carlin is you can listen to him do one of his famous bits, like A Place for My Stuff.
Yeah.
And you can hear it here and you can hear it on the album or you could hear it with Carson or wherever. The words are always the same. Mm-hmm. Without a note, without a prompter, he has that beat and that rhythm almost built into him.
Mm-hmm.
And when you talk about boiling a joke down and getting to the real meat of it, do you find yourself, once it shines up, you're telling it identically each time?
Yeah, the words are the same. The emotion, the emotion can be different. Here's a trick I have. If I get a bit that works and I know how the bit works, if I move it to another place in the set, which I do often, it takes on a different life because it's coming out of a different energy. So I'm delivering I'm delivering the joke in a different, the thoughts can connect. But the performance is going to be different because I'm either coming out of this bit that's up here energetically or down here energetically, or it's either bringing me up or taking me down. That's not the original way I wrote it. So
do you actually, you know, structure the night that way? I know you have some unpredictability.
If I connect two things together, I mean, the thing about New York is you're going to do, unless you're doing a headline set, you're going to do 15, 20 minutes, you know, 10s, 15s, 20s. So you want to get some work done.
Right.
But you got to put a new stuff in the hammock. You got to open up and get them on your side, get them laughing, give the joke a hammock, a place to live, and then connect it to another and then finish strong just in case it doesn't go like you want it. So every time you move something around, the story changes to make it make sense. And when the story changes, there's more possibilities there.
Now, when you're doing these, you said you could do 4 or 5 nights in New York,
4 or 5 sets
or sets in a night. Is that wearying? Is it enthusiastic? Does it energize you to do it that much? Or is it more part of the process for you?
It depends if the joke is working.
I know.
If the joke is working, you can't wait to get on stage, and you'll know it's working right. Because you have fun doing it. You got a new toy to play with, and you move it up closer and closer to the beginning of the set. Because some jokes are great open jokes. You know, you need that bang. You just
take
control. So you see, and then you'll see what it wants to be. You know, it's I've been doing this long enough to know that I'm really not that much part of the process. I just have to be willing to be in it.
Okay.
You know, when I talk to younger comics, they're like, how do you do? I said, I do the same thing you do. I just do it quicker.
Yeah. You're good at it.
Yeah.
And you know how to do the process. And do you ever land on a joke that you're in love with? You think this thing is awesome. You maybe did 4 minutes. You got it down to a minute and a half and you love it. And you can't make it work on stage. Does that ever happen?
I have notebooks full of that.
Oh, do you? Really?
Yeah, jokes that I still maintain are funny, that they just stare at
you. Do you know one offhand?
I have to work on my reading comprehension. I thought Farewell to Arms was about the Venus de Milo. Nothing.
That's great.
Nothing.
Well, when you play Venice, that's going to kill.
That's it.
You got to wait till you do 5 nights in Venice.
Well, you can see everyone tapping the gondola sticks. Who's the funny, man?
This guy, he's a funny. I remember Friday, April 3rd, and Saturday, April 4th, Adam will be at the Arlington Cinema and Draft House. Thank you for indulging me on the comedy questions. I'm such a nerd.
Sure.
I know, but, you know, you've done, it's, again, it sounds jive, but it's true. You've done your motion pictures. You've done your live, your
I've
reality
done many,
TV
many
with Top Gear. Yeah. Full color, many of them full color. But you've done, you know, hour procedurals on television. Yeah. You've done sitcoms on television. They're all different. Do you have a favorite way to work, excluding stand-up?
Like an actor or host? One of the fun. They all have a different appeal. One of the multi-camera was always fun because it was like little theater. You start with a...
Sure.
We're all starting together on a Monday, or a Tuesday's even better when you had a Tuesday shoot.
So, for example, let me make sure I'm understanding this right, and for the listeners too, you're talking like something like The King of Queens, where they're King running Queens, three cameras at once,
three cameras at live once, audience, live audience. Okay. Everybody loves Raymond, and it's like so you're all starting from ground zero. You're bumping into furniture, rehearsing every day. Everything's changing, and then it's show night. The energy of show night with a live audience comes out. And it's best when you have a Tuesday taping, because when you rehearse all week, you get the weekend to let things process.
Let it gel. Yeah, sure.
And then you do the blocking is where the cameras come in and they do all this. And then you tape on Tuesday and everyone goes out for a drink. They're exhausted. Wednesday you show up, get a new piece of you get a new script and it starts all over again. It's
fun
in that because you're part of that energy. It's part of live performance.
Single you camera. Go back a long way with Kevin James, right?
Yeah. We used to share an apartment together.
And may again, but for right now, you're living separately. When you come in, and he was great about bringing stand-ups onto, I got to hang out on the set one day.
Sure, yeah.
And he brings comics on to do small parts, and everyone has got their chops on that show. I bet that made a huge difference on show night, because you got people that are literally fueled by the audience.
Oh, yeah. And it's the spaces get longer. When you get a big laugh, there's just so much room just to be in, and you can just behavior, because you got to wait for your, it's timing, but the timing is dictated by the audience. So you gotta wait for your time, and your instincts will tell you when to hit the next line to ride the wave. But you get to do behavioral stuff. Like, you know, you could, you find different things if you're willing to allow it to take you.
I found the whole process of the multi-camera shoot fascinating.
Yeah.
First of all, you're walking on hallowed ground. You're walking in the old Columbia Studios.
Sure.
Where the great movie stars of the black and white and talkies were there, but they're still there. And the audience is in the room, and it's constructed literally like a play with the moving scenery like you talk about. And they're changing stuff on the fly.
Oh,
if a joke doesn't work, they change it and reshoot it.
Yeah.
The pressure has got to be crazy
too, if it doesn't work. If it doesn't work in the improv, something gets it. I those are some of the best moments where I'm dropping a name.
I wish you would.
I got to work with a great director, Jim Burrows.
Kidding, of course.
So I got to work with him. There's a show called Caroline in the City, and the end of the scene didn't have a button.
Right.
I improvised a button on the end of the scene and I got an applause break.
And wow.
I woke up and I came back out and I felt fine doing it because it was the end of the scene anyway. So while I was doing this on my exit, I just threw a line over my shoulder and it killed.
That's awesome.
And Burroughs looked at me and goes, "That's what I wanted." And you know, he never asked me.
You feel 10 feet tall.
And you're but 10 good thing feet. It killed. It was 10, 15 years, 20 years. I'm telling the story now, Rob. Are you kidding me?
So great. Now, one last question. You've been really generous with your time.
Sure.
The one thing I've not seen you do, and I think you'd be ideal for it, have you ever been approached to do voiceover for like a cartoon?
I was.
Or an animated thing.
Carling's Beer in England. I did radio.
Really?
Yeah, I was the voice of Carling's Beer in England. It's a very closed system. You know, they have their go-to people. And, you know, you audition for stuff, but it's something I would like to do. I'm thinking of just, you know what, I'll write my own cartoons. Just animation's so expensive to do, you know.
Well, I'm a pretty good drawer. I could help.
All right.
We could do it together.
All right.
But you're going to drop me like a hot potato the second Disney calls. I know how it works. It's all show business.
Well, then it's not going to be a shock.
www.adamferrara.com. And remember, you can see Adam this weekend at the Arlington Cinema and Draft House. Great room. And you know what? Plenty of parking, which is important for us suburbanites.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can check it all out. Adam, it's such a pleasure.
Always good seeing you, brother. Be well. Be happy. Thank you guys for having me on. I always love talking to you.
It's a blast. Love you, and we'll talk to you soon. We'll be back tomorrow with a new Mike O'Mara show, and we'll talk to you then. Thanks again, Adam.
Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.